He was a morbidly obese surgeon destined for an operating table and an early death. Now he's a rebel MD who is fabulously fit and fighting to make America healthy again. This is Stay Off My Operating Table with Dr. Philip Ovadia.
Well, hey, folks, it's the Stay Off My Operating Table podcast. We've got a little different kind of show today. I'm looking forward to how this goes. We literally have no idea how this is going to work out. We're joined today by Ari Tulla, who's the CEO. Do I pronounce your last name correctly?
Perfectly.
Ari Tulla, CEO of a company called, is it pronounced ELO or just ELO?
ELO.
ELO Smart Nutrition. When I see that, I can't help but think of the Electric Light Orchestra, which is...
Indeed.
All right. Well, Phil, this guy's got an interesting one.
Yeah, definitely. When first became aware of him, and I was very fascinated by his background. Lots of involvements with different aspects of health tech, and pretty interesting stuff that they're doing at ELO. And so excited to get to know Ari and to hear a little bit about some of his current endeavors. So Ari, why don't you introduce yourself to our audience, give a little bit of your background, and then we can kind of talk about some of the stuff that you've done and are now doing.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Really great to be here. And quick background. I'm from Finland. Moved to California about 16 years ago. And if I speak funny or you don't understand me, blame my Finnish roots and my old language I have. But I spent my 90s in playing video games, and I was very fortunate to be one of the early people to get to play online, and actually became one of the early people who made money by playing video games. And 2000s, oh, wow. I spent building video games. So I was involved in a lot of the early mobile games that today mobile games are a massive phenomenon. You know, when we started, we had like 40 people in a room building the first games. And then 2021s, I dedicated completely almost on building two companies, Better Doctor and Quest Analytics, focusing on helping people to access healthcare, finding the right doctor, building a better network of doctors. And the 22s, I think I'm going to spend 100% on nutrition and trying to do a bit of the same thing we did at the Better Doctor and Quest, where we help people navigate care. Now we want to help people to navigate the complicated world of nutrition and food.
So on your website, you said that leading Better Doctor and Quest Analytics were a personal vendetta to build a better healthcare system. First of all, I love the phrasing. Secondly, why was this vendetta? Why was this a vendetta, and why was it personal? Of course, maybe all vendettas are personal, but why was it a vendetta?
There's a movie that was made in 2000 something called V for Vendetta.
Oh yeah,
I love the movie. I think we also go rewatch that movie. I haven't seen it for a long time. I need to see it again. You reminded me of that. I've been a tech person. I'm a technologist. I believe in the idea that you can deploy innovations. You can use the new technology to evolve people's lives. And sometimes we take a misstep, like with social media, maybe with the smartphones. We adopt them too hard. We become too addicted. Like the gaming as well. But for me, it all started 2002. My wife, then she was a girlfriend at the time, she had a thyroid tumor. Out of nowhere, a 23-year-old woman has a fist-sized tumor on her neck. And that's taken away. Together with goes half the other thyroid. And that, as it often does, it led into autoimmune diseases, conditions that are these unknown unknowns. Today, we know a lot more than we did 20 years ago. And we got a verdict that, you know, she's fine. So the healthcare system in Finland at that time, it did exactly what it should do. It took away the tumor. It healed her. Yet it left her in a position to be medicated for life with the cocktail that makes it impossible to get pregnant. So we basically lost our ability to have a family at that young age. And, you know, later we got married and, you know, of course you start thinking about your legacy, your life. And we definitely wanted to have a family. So we spent almost a decade of our life on trying to navigate that problem, first in Europe and then later in the US. And we talked to maybe 50 different doctors. We went to the Eastern medicine, the Western medicine. And finally we got help from a person who navigated us into kind of like a anti-inflammatory diet where you eat low carb. We went off meat, we went off any type of carbs, added sugar, and that did help. And today, of course, we know that that type of diet can treat type 2 diabetes, it can heal it and reverse it, it can help, you know, even LSA. A lot of different diseases that are complicated and hard to treat can be now helped with this diet. So it did work, and then we found out that, you know, despite, you know, heavy effort, you know, we had to go IVF. And we got pregnant after maybe 11 years of the work. And then we lost our first son, totally irrelevant thing on this. So it's like this whole long paddle that ends up into the worst possible scenario for the parents. And I decided a few years ago to start talking about this publicly because, you know, now we have, you know, two healthy, beautiful kids who are 9 and 5. And our life is great, but it was really hard for a long time. And many people don't talk about these things like losses. And, you know, many people get miscarriages, many people lose their children, and they keep it inside. And in the end, it eats you alive. So that became kind of my vendetta in a sense. But I was in a European healthcare system where you are getting a doctor who you get. You don't really have a selection bias or problem like we do in the US. And then I came here to California. I was, you know, very fortunate to have a big company. I was at Nokia at the time, and they, you know, you get your stuff back in Europe and they ship them here. They give you an apartment, your keys, and easy migration in a way. But, you know, we got this golden card, one of these Cadillac health plans. You can go to any doctor you want. And there are a million of them, and we didn't know who to go. And we were vulnerable. We were weak. We were looking for solutions. So we navigated the healthcare system for a long time and felt that it's really difficult. And that's kind of where the idea of a better doctor came to be. And of course, you know, along the way, food became medicine for me and my wife. And we have, you know, the children to prove. So I'm a fervent believer of food as medicine for a long time. And when we had our loss, we decided to, you know, we kind of sold our stuff and we punted all the money into one fund and we started to invest in startups. That's kind of what I know. So we did that and we've been investing for small amounts of money, but like 55 companies. And we've been investing a lot of food tech and health and waste and human performance type of companies. And some of them are now doing really well. So we learned a lot along the way. And I really wanted to build the third company in healthcare in the space of nutrition.
Yeah, great story. As a heart surgeon now for 30 years, you know, deep in the quagmire that is the medical system, certainly appreciate, you know, you recognizing and the problem that exists, and that is, you know, how to find a good doctor. And it's something we talk about a lot on this program, actually, because, you know, whether you're in Europe and get assigned a doctor or you're here in the US and your insurance plan basically says, well, go see the guy down the street. You know, it's very hit or miss, you know, and unfortunately, doctors are oftentimes sort of handcuffed by what they can do and what they've been taught and their knowledge base, and may not recognize the power of nutrition and the food that we eat. Very interesting to hear how you, you know, experienced that and came across it. Talk a little bit about, you know, sort of technology and health, because one of the things that's always amazed me about the healthcare system is, yes, we have a lot of, you know, cutting edge technology and new instruments and tools to use for surgical procedures, all of that stuff. But at the same time, we still use fax machines and beepers. And it always really amazed me, that dichotomy, how, you know, technologically backwards we can be at the same time while, you know, having all of this cutting edge stuff to me, available to us. So I'd love to hear kind of your perspective on, you know, tech and healthcare.
Yeah, I think I have a little unique background in a sense that I've been really lucky to be able to witness firsthand the internet. Like I happened to be in the right place as a kid, and I was connected, I don't know, like 93 or something like that. One of the first people in Europe. My dad had access to university, and you know, that's how I got in there. You know, before we invented the World Wide Web and the website and stuff like that, really. So I've been seeing that that growth from the beginning, where we had few people who heard about it, and then suddenly it became a huge thing in 2000s when, you know, we spent billions and billions on stupid companies that, you know, never did anything valuable except the PowerPoint deck. And then it finally, you know, in 2010-20, it finally became real. And then I joined Nokia at the time when they were building the first smartphone. It was called N95, the first device you can actually have video, web browsing, email. And we saw the data. We first launched it internally at Nokia to 100,000 people. And we were like, what's happening? Because, you know, people were starting to use it in a way that was unbelievable. We had like 4 hours of use time. It used to be 20 minutes of phone calls. And nobody was making phone calls anymore. So it completely went upside down. And we knew immediately that this would change the world. We were the first people probably in the world to know that. So that was a really interesting moment to be. And then if you think about the healthcare, and, you know, I'm coming into healthcare from very outside, from the bleeding edge of tech. And the problem we have is that we have not, because of certain regulations and the fragility of the system, we haven't been able to adopt the basic things yet. Like, if you think about the digitalization, it's a word we don't use a lot anymore. We used a lot 10 years ago. But the idea is that, you know, industries are moving from the offline to online. Online, of course, means that we go off paper, we go into databases, in the cloud, where we can actually look at the data in scale. And then, of course, we went mobile to make the user experience better, to have this sort of a always-on mentality where you have a phone with you, and the other side, the customer also has a phone, you can interact with it. And of course, today we are talking mainly about the AI. But you can't really do machine learning and AI before you have moved the industry into the cloud. And that's still something we are doing. And I've given many, many talks about this topic, and it's a long story, but maybe one point that is interesting for people, like, think about what is already an industry that went through this change first. You have travel. I mean, how many people go to travel agent? I mean, we don't probably even know if there's a travel agent anymore. Anyway, how many people are, you know, buying CDs or DVDs? I think, you know, Amazon just, the Netflix stopped sending DVDs like 2 weeks ago. That was the business they started, and they stopped it. So it's all digital, everything. And it's so different today. We are all cutting cable. Like, nobody has cable in 10 years from now. It's all going to be off. And we are paying now to 15 different places. I don't know, it's better to pay the cable company or pay 15 different people. Then we can debate about that. But the point is that those industries already moved online. And, you know, millions of people were displaced globally. There were millions of travel agents. There were millions of people, you know, doing these things before. And now what we have at the moment, we have automotive. Think about your car. You know, 10 years ago, none of us had an electric car. Now all of us are buying electric car because it's a better car. It's, of course, you know, environmentally nice, and, you know, it accelerates faster. It's easy to plug it in at home. It's just a better thing. But we didn't have those 10 years ago. We didn't have Uber. So in San Francisco, where I'm, there's no taxis anymore. There are more self-driving cars here in the city today than there are taxis in the city. So it's just the unbelievable change. And we are in a halfway point of this. So when we end up this change in automotive, we will have cars that don't have a steering wheel. We would like to be banned of driving a car in certain areas because we are too bad at driving as humans. So that's what it looks like. Think about this. What will healthcare look like when we go? Because we are in the beginning of the chasm. Automotive is in the chasm today, and we have no idea what it is. Banking, by the way, and money is in the chasm today, in the middle of it. Like, we have Bitcoin. We haven't even seen cash for many, you know, months. That will happen in healthcare, and the world will look so different. And I have a huge amount of empathy for any doctor, any caregiver, anyone working in the healthcare system. Because by default, and you guys know better than anyone, that you know, healthcare and the patient interaction is all about data. You are analyzing the patient, you know, you look at the face. We have an unbelievable ability as humans to look at your face and see if you're healthy or not. I bet you guys know if somebody has a heart issue, you can look at their eyes and the face and you know the color of the skin, all these things. But basically what we take, you know, the basic vitals. How tall are you? How much you weight? What is the blood pressure? Do you smoke? All data points. And if you are seeing 2,000 or 3,000 or 4,000 patients a year, you can't remember all of them. So what do you end up going? You are using the EMR that suck. And then you are pulling the record out. You are inputting more data. You spend half an hour with every person you have. Of course, more if you are a specialist. But you know, you don't have the time to really go deep into it. And I think the truth is that the algorithms and the AI will be much better than a human at analyzing data. And I think we have a moment when there will be an assistant, AI assistant for me and you and everybody for the consumers, but there also will be a really capable bot that will help every doctor to navigate. And then the doctor will make the decisions in the end. But there will be this sort of a support function, and that will make everything faster. And I think we have a better healthcare and better care to people because we can have an eye contact. We don't need to have this sort of EMR contact that we have today.
I'm not sure I want to ask all the questions that spring to mind because I just don't want to go that direction. Let's go directly to Elo Health. I went online and did the personal survey. I thought it was really interesting. I don't want to steal your thunder, though. Tell us about Elo Health and how you're helping move the healthcare technology farther along that S-curve that most industries are going through. I thought it was really interesting.
So I decided to, maybe 3-4 years ago, I decided to take a stab at this new idea. And I had thought about it for a long time. Like I said, I had been, you know, helping and investing in companies in the space already. Some of them are doing amazing work, like, you know, Virta Health, who is reversing type 2 diabetes and has done that for more than 30,000 people today. Amazing company, maybe one of the most impactful companies we're going to see in healthcare. So I was learning from these masters and trying to look and what I can do, what I can bring to the game. And I'm relatively good at, you know, spinning an idea, raising money, getting people around, rallying it. I got my two co-founders to join. I have my longtime co-founder, CTO Tapio, who's, we've been working together 17 years every day. So it's been a long battle. I think there's a fifth company that we're working together now. And then I got a longtime friend also called Miklos Silvanto, who joined. And he had been at Apple for a decade. He was one of the designers in Sony Ive's team. So one of those 10 people who made all the products we use every day, the headphones and, you know, the laptops and the iPads and iPhones and so forth. So we decided to look at this, like, what can we do? We can raise money. We can, you know, assemble people together to build an idea. And we wanted to validate this food as medicine. What need to be done to validate that it can work? And many people already know it works, but what do we need to validate so people can really believe and see the outcomes? So we started from this concept that, okay, we want to build a system where we are assessing people in the beginning. You talked about the questionnaire, the assessment we do. So how can we assess people? We can do a health questionnaire that's been done by, you know, every medical practice in the world for the last 100 years. It's a beautiful method of collecting data. You can make a really good questionnaire in a way that you can actually really understand a lot about the person. And you can use that to then analyze, you know, what the needs are. You can also do, as many of us do all the time, blood biomarkers. So we built a blood biomarker collection system. So we can send an at-home collection kit to people and they do a finger prick and we analyze the data. Very close to the data that you get from any function today. And then we also decided that because we've been working for so many years in this area of tech, which is the devices we have now, like the Apple Watch and the Oura Ring and the Whoop and a glucose monitor. So what if we take all that data as well? So we have the wearable data, the biomarker data, the traditional one like blood or urine or whatever, and then we take the assessment of the questionnaire and panel that together, throw it to the AI, and see what the AI can do to recommend you the right nutrition that can help you to achieve your goals, maintain your health, or even, you know, help you gain better health. And that took about 2 years to build the system. And now we've been live running thousands of people through it. And it seems to work pretty well. So what we also do, we put in a mix also a person, because, you know, AI is very fallible and they are learning fast, but, you know, they're still pretty toddler-like. So we threw in a mix a dietitian who will be communicating with every patient, every member, one-on-one. So we can have that human touch coaching layer. And then we started to test people again after the fact. So after 3 months or 6 months, we test again and see the outcomes. And the outcomes have been really good. I mean, we've been able to help people to lower, the A1C, the LDL, the weight. And it's not just because, you know, we give people pills or powders or gummies now, but it's really because we have this sort of system that makes people make better decisions. And the coaching is a huge component for that.
Bill, I know you've got some questions, but I want to follow up real quick on the AI situation. And because I think this is vital. One of the criticisms of ChatGPT, OpenAI's monster engine, is that it's not truly intelligent in that there's no decision-making that's happening. It's simply ingesting massive amounts of data and doing some pattern recognition with language. And, you know, there's a very, very old rule in information technology, garbage in, garbage out. I want to know about the raw data, the input that is the AI is accessing to generate the output recommendations. In other words, how is the raw data that feeds the output being assessed for validity, for accuracy? And obviously, you know this, but for our listeners, I'm asking this question because there's just a shit ton of awful of medically wrong, scientifically bad data out there. And it's not just on blogs. It's in peer-reviewed studies. There's a study that just came out that red meat is implicated in diabetes. I mean, that's fundamentally bullshit. So how do you make sure the raw data, the data the AI is building, isn't garbage?
Well, I think let me take maybe one step back and say,
sure.
And I'll go through how do we build this. So, we built this before ChatGPT was available,
right?
And currently, we don't use any LLM, large language model, at all at Elo. And I hope we will once there is a guardrails that we can turn it into a coach, when we can turn it into a dietitian. That makes total sense. But so the system we built is not that complicated. So we took all the human trial research papers in nutrition space. It's not that many, less than 20,000. And we looked at them in the lens of, okay, which of them are nutrients that, you know, we could deliver in a form of a, you know, pill, a powder, gummy, or food. And then we picked around about 100 different ingredients. And we narrowed it down to 78 or 80 in the end. And we had 6,000 studies that our team read and basically labeled into the system. So we had a number of people, mainly, you know, PhD students and stuff like that, who were reading every study, because you had to change the dosing. You had to understand the context. They were not always done in a way you can just kind of read it with the computer. You had to kind of label them.
Right.
So we did that, and we built a system where we looked at all the studies, and we looked at built like our own score for validity. Like we looked at, you know, where were the published, what is the impact of this publication, is it how credible it is, how many people have been citing the studies, and how many people have been sharing them in media and the world. So that gave us some sort of understanding like how impactful a study was, and then what we did, we built assessments based on that data. We built about 150 assessments. So this can be like your HRV, your sleep, amount of sleep, or your LDL cholesterol, or your A1C, or your, you know, your steps you take, or your condition that you have diagnosed. Those can be assessments. And those are the things we are collecting based on the assessment questionnaire, based on the wearable device data, based on the blood biomarker data. And can we add more assessments? Absolutely. We can add maybe, you know, hundreds or more. But those are the ones that were most commonly used in those studies. So we took kind of the assessment helped us then to define also what to assess. Like it helped us to define the panel of blood biomarkers we are doing. And then we got that to the market. And we did in a way where we got first people to do for, they started the blood test. And then they communicated and connected over Zoom, like we did here, with our dietitian and our coaches and our health providers. And then in that moment, the person assessed them based on a 45-minute discussion. And then they also got data from the algorithm. What did it propose? And we reconciled that. And always the person made the final call. So we did thousands of these sessions. And we every time we did it, we let the algorithm learn from the human. Human was learning it to be better. And now we are in a phase where the algorithm is better than the human is. So we have done, you know, maybe 10,000 different, you know, learning sessions that helped to make it better. And now we are getting the third phase, that is the most interesting one, which is now the real-world evidence. Are we seeing the same outcome as the study proposes? So study says that, you know, for, let's say, LDL, there's a study about, you know, you can do certain supplements and minerals and ingredients that, you know, can help it on some level. And then we do that for people and we run them for 6 months, 3 months. And if the same outcomes are happening, then that study becomes more valid. Another study, like you are so right, there is absolute garbage that has been published. Some are like 10 people studies, 15 people. But, you know, we have hundreds of people in this cohort. So we can have a 10 time bigger study running already. And every person in our ELO program is basically an N of one in a clinical trial that's ongoing. We can't publish them, of course, all because we don't have a separate group of, you know, placebo. But, you know, it will help us to create new science. And we believe that once we have 100,000 people who go through the system, we have created more new science than there is science today we built the algorithm from.
Yeah, such a fascinating approach, you know, and so that kind of leads to the question, you know, how much validity do we give to, you know, the randomized, controlled, peer-reviewed, you know, studies that are out there versus the, you know, thousands or tens of the thousands, or when you get up to millions of N equals one, you know, type studies like you're talking about. And, you know, you mentioned Virta Health before, which I believe you're invested in. And they're such a great example of this because, you know, the standard dogma that I had learned, certainly, and doctors are still learning today, is that type 2 diabetes is a progressive disease. It is not reversible. And now here we have Virta Health. And of course, you know, the work that myself and many of my colleagues are doing, showing over and over and over again that, yes, you can reverse type 2 diabetes. So, you know, where does that balance come where, you know, tens, hundreds, millions of N equals one versus, well, the randomized controlled, you know, published study shows something else?
Well, I think luckily we work, and ELO is 100% working in the field of food and nutrition. So luckily, you know, these are substances we can buy in every grocery store. They are all very benign. So there is no, we don't use drugs at all. So basically doing these studies is easy in a way that, you know, we don't need to, you know, have that rigor. If you have like, where you have new molecule that we have never used, of course you have to be very, very careful with it. And you have to, you know, be having all these guardrails. So I think anyone using food today, they have this super power in a way that they can do this thing and study. And it's more about the questions and the system you built around it, the platform, if you can collect the data. You know, everybody is eating already. We have, you know, 7-8 billion people on the planet. We eat every day and we have some different outcomes from it. So, but I think it's very difficult to do a double placebo randomized trial in food. It's only been done a few times in the history. Like we had the Biosphere 2 when we had people, well, ended up badly, but we learned a lot. And then there's some prison studies done, back in the days, and some very, ugly studies done by, war criminals that, actually were really insightful in back in the days. Because, you had a group of people, you could, and like mental asylums in the US, there were studies done that were really like absolutely horrendous. But, they gave a lot of insight. And, but I don't know, how do we do a study today that we take people who don't eat, or we take people who eat very specific thing, or like the supersized me idea, how do we take people and give them the worst? I mean, that's not ethical.
Yeah.
So I don't really know how to do it, because all these meta studies that we do, where we find these things that, the red meat causes, cancer and all these things. I mean, I think the carcinogens are there, and it probably is true if you, burn the food. But the point that, some people say meat is somehow poison. I mean, I've been a vegetarian, a vegan for a long time. I've been eating meat now for the last few years, and you can eat meat that is likely going to be very healthy for you. So we at ELO, we don't believe in dogma. We don't believe in diet. Diet in our vocabulary is basically this is not a real construct. It's a limitation we put to our simple reptile brain to do certain things in a certain order. If you have a computer and AI helping you, you don't need to think about the diet. And the point is, like, you could eat the stuff, if you love eating hamburgers or if you love pizza, you can make the pizza or the burger to be such that it's super healthy and good for you. And it can be done almost as tasty. So there's a lot we can do, I think.
Whoa. Let's back up there. We can, with the right intelligence, create a pizza that's good for you. I just want to I want to just let that settle for a moment.
Oh, problem we need to solve.
I am so I think that may be one of the single most profound statements we've ever had on this show. A pizza that is good for, I had to give up pizza years ago. Oh, this would make me so happy. I apologize.
I got some recipes for you, Jack. We'll talk about off air. So one of the kind of, places I guess I'm going to in my mind is this balance between nutrients and food. Because some might hear what you're saying and interpret it as, we don't need to eat food anymore. We just need the computer to kind of tell us what balance of nutrients we need. And, we'll just pop the, whatever it is. You guys have gummies, and I'm not criticizing the gummies, but theoretically you say, okay, well, here's the super gummy that just has all the nutrients you need, and we don't need to eat food anymore. Yet obviously as human beings, we evolved eating food. So how do you kind of view that balance?
I mean, my company is not a supplement company. We call what we do smart nutrition. So we are trying to build systems that are helping people, like I said, eat better and get healthier. And you guys both know that, that is very doable and not that difficult. It just requires a lot of behavior change and a lot of education, and sometimes too difficult for people to do. So supplements, they are called supplements. They supplement your health. And of course, like I think we all know, many people have basic deficiencies today, like vitamin D. Maybe 60, 70% of people have low vitamin D. If you pump it up, you're going to feel different. B12, many people who are vegan, vegetarian, they default have a B12 deficiency. Iron is a big deal. We know that, more than half the women over 35 have a big deficiency of protein. They're going to be having brittle bones when they get older. So if you are a woman over 35, I would highly recommend you to focus on having a protein in your day, not once, but twice or three times, because you're just not going to have enough muscle density and muscle to be a person you want to be at your 70s and 80s. So at ELO, I think we are looking at this in a way that, what can we do to not interfere your life too much? What can we do to help you and build products that are going to be exciting, tasty, easy for you? The world has to be better not more difficult if we want to have millions of people to change the way how they eat today? Elon Musk, we can debate about his merits on many things, but he built a car that is a better car, not a better electric car. The Tesla is a better car. That's why it's the most sold vehicle today in the whole world, the Y model. What can we do here? Can we build not again another healthcare monster or Frankenstein that nobody wants to use or understand? What if we build something better? What if we build something that's tastier and learns about you? Like, we are trying to build things today at Elo that are personalized for you. That's the ground idea we have. Make them personal to you. We also try to make them precise, that they're grounded in real science, not the voodoo. And we are trying to make them proactive, that they get better over time. The whole system learns about you. It learns about the whole mass of people using it, but also about you. And not only from the perspective of, you know, maybe helping you to get your blood biomarkers right or get your needle on the weight scale to be right, but also making it better tasting. How many times only person that asked you today about the taste of food who listens is a mom? Moms actually ask you, like, is it too salty? And you say it's too salty, the mom will change the recipe. Your restaurant, the Italian restaurant you go, you tell them this pizza sucks, it's too salty. They're never going to think of, like, ban this person. We don't like to see this person anymore. He's not wanted here. Nobody will change the recipe based on the feedback. But, you know, what if it could? What if I could say that I never want to have these olives again? I never want to have this type of thing again. And it never sells again. If that's a grocery basket or, you know, meal delivery or whatever. That would be kind of cool. So food, breakfast is a key. And we can modify breakfast, I think. You know, good breakfast could be, you know, eggs, an omelette, you know, spinach, maybe some, you know, meat if you want, some protein. Or it could be a protein shake, for example. That we can do already at Elo. And that's pretty good. I do it every day. I eat my own dog food. I've been having my own Elo protein shake for the last 2 years every morning, today as well. And it works really well. And then I think the other point here is that you have concepts like how do we get the lunch done properly? I think lunch should be like a salad with a protein or something very simple. But then at dinner, I think, you know, that should be your time. And I don't think anyone should tell people what the dinner is, because food in the end is sacred. Breaking bread, you know, made us humans. We sat in a campfire and we learned to speak and we learned to, you know, paint and we learned to be humans. So we can't change that. And I think there's so much culture and stuff in the dinner that we don't want to change that. And I think the one meal a day that you don't worry about too much, I think you're going to be fine.
I love that idea. There will be those who argue with it, but I love the idea that gathering together to break bread is a fundamental component of what it means to be human. And there's far more to sharing a meal than just the chemical aspect of it. I want to talk about the wearable data. You talked about biomarkers, assessments, and then the wearable data. Is there a plan to integrate wearables data into Elo's database?
70% of people who use Elo today, or members, they have connected Apple Health and one or more wearable devices to the platform. Some people have linked as many as 7 devices. And then we get you into sleep, HRV, weight, blood pressure, glucose, everything.
So
the data is you've got the hooks already.
Yeah,
it's happening.
And yeah, how one of the first companies who done it.
Yeah. So how are you going about the sort of problem of filtering that data properly? You know, obviously, you know, there's a lot of data that gets generated by these wearables, all sorts of different parameters that you can look at. And I think one of the challenges today for, you know, clinicians like myself, and we say, yeah, great, we want to have more data on people. We want to have insight into their daily lives rather than just the, you know, couple of times a year that they happen to be sitting in front of us. But it becomes a challenge to know, among all this data, how do we start to pick out what's actually relevant?
Yeah, I 100% agree. And I think there's a really real problem of the race condition, because, you know, this person who has seven devices happens to be me. So I'm a guinea pig of all these things. And you know, how the heck do we know at Elo if I have, you know, three devices tracking every bike ride and my run and my sleep? So it's very confusing. So we need to pick one. And that's not going to be a trivial thing to do. The more data we have, it's not only about, you know, the race condition, but also the comparability of the different devices. They all calibrate differently. They are all maybe okay in their own way if you compare only that data. But if you take this data and that data, it's the same as a blood testing. You know, you go to the, you know, I'm a member of Kaiser Permanente. One maybe a year ago, I went to every Kaiser lab in the Bay Area at the same time. I basically gave them my blood at the same time and did the same panel, and the results were very different. So even in a high-end hospital, God, you get different, you know, results. So there's a 20%, you know, error rate on basic, you know, biomarker results. So I want to make a point to people who said that our system sucks because we have maybe 10% variance. So the variance happens, you know, in every lab, depending on calibration and stuff like that. But I think the world, practical example. So we do not use all of the data yet, because I don't think we have human understanding yet on what HRV means in daytime. I mean, we are starting to understand it, but we are not going to be able, as a company focusing on nutrition, to be building like these fundamental theories. We have to have partners who are developing them. And there has to be science that already is established. We can't create the new science. It's too much work for us. So many things we have today in our backend, we do look, but we don't really, it doesn't impact on every product. But practical example. So our protein product is basically fully customized to you. Every month we are sending you one or two bags, depending if you want to do a daily protein or if you want to do only like a recovery protein. People use it differently. And every month we calibrate that based on your workout profile or your strength profile. So last month, for example, I was doing a lot more bike riding and a lot more endurance activities. I compete in rock climbing. I try to be very active. I broke my toe. I couldn't rock climb, so I went on the bike. So it changed my monthly utilization completely. And I was very curious to see how it will evolve my product. Suddenly I was added electrolytes into my product because I was doing a lot longer exercises. I was sweating more, and it was really hot here in the Bay Area, so it knew the place I'm exercising. And then, of course, you know, there was also some things like, I think like the BCAA, like a special amino acid blend. I think I get like something like Tartseri or something that was good for my recovery after long endurance activities. So the whole product changed, and it was no carbs before, and now it was added carbs for the recovery. So that's how it works. And after every workout today, when I do, I use Strava, I use Apple, whatever I use to, you know, track it, it will tell me after my workout how much of that recovery product I need, the dosing. So I built a real-time dosing there. So that's pretty cool that, you know, you have this daily feedback loop, and then you can utilize the wearable devices in a very new way.
So that's what the app is for on the phone. I was going to ask you, what's the app doing?
App is the connector, because, you know, we use Apple Health as a gateway, and it's not really known broadly, but Apple Health is this unbelievable platform that is using the Fire APIs to connect to the EMRs, to the backend of healthcare. So I can connect my Kaiser Permanente, I can connect my Quest Labs, my LabCorp data into Apple Health. And then I can also, of course, connect all my wearable devices. So the Apple is the gateway, and we use them because it's so easy for you as a consumer to go to Apple Health and you can turn it on and off. You can turn on and off whatever you want for Elo or other partners you want to share the data with. Or you can even share it to your doctors or your other health systems from there. So it really is becoming this real health gateway. And it's a bit surprising. Many people haven't really followed that, but they have built a really, really robust platform for that.
Okay. So that's simple.
Yeah, no, just amazing. So how far away do you think it is that you know, you'll be able to really design full meal plans for people and, you know, kind of give them the shopping list and the recipe and, you know, taking in all this data and saying, this is what you should be eating in a day. And, you know, some of it's going to come from, you know, the protein powders, like you mentioned, maybe, or the gummies, but, you know, a lot of it's just going to be whole real food and helping people to understand how to construct that meal plan?
We all do. We do that all already. So our platform is building a whole nutrition plan, and that can be delivered in multiple different ways. So it's just about how quickly are we able to integrate these pieces. Like next years, I think we need to integrate to meal delivery. Think about like your DoorDash or Uber Eats. We need to integrate to your grocery delivery. Think about like Amazon Fresh or Instacart. And I hope we can also integrate into that you walk in the restaurant and then, you know, you open the app, it will tell you what to eat. We have the menus. And but there's a lot of, you know, every one of these ideas is something that, you know, will take a lot of time, a lot of work, because it's not easy to do it nationwide. I could do it in San Francisco today, but to do it in a whole country is hard. And we decided at Elo that our focus is about taking the data from your body. We talked about these different modalities and then turning it into the plan that we can then deliver for your home, to your kitchen counter. So today we are shipping you the protein product, we are shipping you supplements, and we are shipping this new amazing, you know, custom-made gummy vitamin that we 3D print 7 layers into one gummy, representing 7 pills. We have 300 million combinations. We launched the product last week. So it's like unbelievably exciting for us, because we wanted to do something better than the pills. People don't like taking supplement pills. So can we make a better modality? And I hope next year we're going to see more products. I think the biomarker testing will probably get much more robust, much more complete than we had before. But it will take years to build this. But in principle, the same algorithm, the same system could basically go and order you the meals or the groceries from DoorDash or Instacart.
I'm looking at the gummies. And two questions. Why did you choose gummies as a platform for the vitamins and supplements? And second question, talk about the 3D printing. That's so cool.
When we started the company, I love science fiction, and you know, I'm a big buff of Star Trek, and Star Trek Replicator was my kind of idea. That could we build that? Could we build a device at home that, you know, could just, you know, print you the food, not just, you know, like a gummy, but like whole meal? I don't think we can do it today. I think we can do it in a decade from now. Like I said, I think we can do very different things when the time goes forward. We have a robot at home who can do this. The gummy was this idea that came from a lot of, you know, our children. We all have kids, the founders, and our kids don't even, they were looking at pills we were creating, and they were like, what are these? Vitamins are gummies in their mind. And we were like, huh, like the kids don't even, they don't even want to take the pill. They never can take the pill. They can take the gummy. And then we talked to a lot of people, and people were saying, you know, the gummies are the future, and we love gummies. And why do they love gummies? It's easy. It's convenient, fun. It tastes good. And the pills are like, they smell bad. They're hard to swallow. And they are associated to unhealthy behavior or unhealthiness, because medications is like, supplements are about like staying healthy. Pills are about, you know, avoiding or not getting more ill in a way. So that was the talk in the beginning. And we then looked at the idea that, could we do this differently? I was traveling the whole world to, you know, look for partners. So we found a partner who can do, you know, hand-packed protein powder with all these different, 100 different things. It was hard. We found a partner who can do pill packs with 100 different pills in the one pack. Super difficult. And then we found a partner in England, actually, who was able to do this. And we worked with them for 2 years to build this modality. And now it's live, and there was a lot of blood, sweat, and tears went into it, because it is a very new thing. And we had, for example, to do a study to validate that the gummies are equal to the pills. So we took vitamin D, the most common deficiency, and we did a study with you know, 40 people on the gummy side, 40 people on the pill side, run it for 90 days. We tested finger prick venipuncture in the beginning and finger prick venipuncture in the end, and same outcomes. So we kind of know that, you know, in most cases, I think the gummies are equal to the pills. And of course, we had to dose them differently. Most gummy vitamins have, let's say, 200 IU of vitamin D. We pumped it to 2000 IU per layer, and it's 7 layers. So we can have 40 different ingredients in any composition of the layers. And we have 8 flavors. So we have 389 million combinations today when we launched the product.
Wow. And just to point out, you know, which will be certainly relevant to my audience, these are sugar free too. They're not the typical gummies that are loaded with sugar. So very interesting.
Eight calories, no glycemic pump at all. I've tested hundreds of them on the glucose monitor, and they're also vegan. So if people are worried about different things like gelatin and stuff like that.
What's the vegan version of gummies made from?
So we use there's a couple of different, you know, there's erythritol and maltitol, two different sugar, you know, components that we use, and then we have a kind of scaffolding that, you know, it's different layers are done differently. Sometimes you need to even like microcapsulate the ingredients because some of them smell or taste really bad. Like vitamins are very bitter. So to keep the taste, you know, good. But we try to be very as organic as you can be in building it. Of course, you have to have certain, you know, system to keep it together as a gummy form.
Okay, that's wild. All right, well, while we were sitting here, I took the assessment. Actually, I took the assessment before we talked. But while we were sitting here, I got the notification that your particular the one custom designed for my needs is ready. So I just placed an order. I'm gonna be testing here, see how it works. I'm fascinated by the idea. I think the idea has a lot of merit. Phil, I want to hear your thoughts as a medical professional. Let's critique this thing. As a consumer, I'm like, I'll try it. Sounds good. Let's give it a shot. What are your thoughts as a medical professional?
Yeah, so I love the concepts. I love, you know, bringing the data and the right data to this problem and helping people to understand what they need to eat, where the deficiencies may be, and how we can overcome that. The concept of popping a gummy instead of taking, you know, many of my patients are on long list of supplements. It sometimes amazes me how many supplements they're popping in a day. And overall, I try and minimize that. I think ultimately we should be getting most of these nutrients from the food that we're eating and eating nutrient-dense real food, which it sounds like you certainly agree with. But there is the realistic, that oftentimes we can't. And even our nutrient-dense real food these days, because of the way that it's raised sometimes or grown, you know, sometimes is not as nutrient dense as we need it to be. So I love the concept. I love bringing, you know, the high level data analysis to this problem. And honestly, I look forward to keeping in touch because, you know, some of the related projects that I'm involved in, I think there'll be a lot of overlap. So really, really glad we had this conversation. And I'll probably be taking my assessment later on this evening when we finish up with these the podcasts and some of the other work I need to do today. But really fascinating. So thanks for coming on.
Were there any questions Are there any questions we should have asked you that we didn't?
Well, I think, you know, big question, big thank you first, you know, for, you know, giving positive, you know, feedback. It's hard, you know, work to build new products, and you never know if they make any sense before you hear people feedback. And we literally launched this like, you know, a week ago. So we haven't had really huge amount of time to talk to the customers and the early members. So big thanks for that. And I think there is the one element that I think we didn't talk about that is interesting with the gummy specifically, because there's really no reason why the gummy could not be a delivery vehicle also for medicine. Of course, we need to be wary about, you know, can we guard them in a way that the children won't take them or people won't take too many of them because they really taste quite good. But the key problem I think we have now in healthcare, one of the many problems is the adherence. And today, almost half the medicine is not eaten at all. And then it doesn't really matter if you as a doctor, you know, you give people the right things if they don't then take them. And this applies to antibiotics. It also applies to the $200,000 cancer drugs. People don't take them always. So how can we build a better system? And that's one reason we also have the app, that you know, the app is telling me right now here that, you know, have I taken my daily, you know, dosing and so forth. So this is the kind of whole idea that, you know, you have this sort of ability to be closer to the person. And I think the one element that I'm really bullish about today is this concept of having these chatbots, once they are ready for the healthcare world, getting them to people's apps and phones in a way that they will be there when you want to talk to somebody. And there's no latency. Like, how many times a doctor will get an email that they respond maybe day or two later because there's not enough time to do it? What if you could get the response in 5 seconds or 2 seconds? That will be making the dialogue 1,000 times more prevalent. And I think people have a lot of questions, but they don't always get the answers. So I hope we can do that, because 90% of the normal discussion and dialogue in healthcare could probably be done today by chatbots. And it would be great if people have that access immediately. And it wouldn't be, because the problem here is that you are getting the best care if you are loudest of the bumps. You have 1,000 people and somebody's really loud and, you know, they are like coming to the office and, you know, they are demanding care. Those people do get the care. But there are also a lot of people who don't say anything, and then they come in and they are too sick to be healed. And that to me is a problem that, you know, could we use this sort of chatbot in a preventative way and screening the people who need help most?
Makes sense. That's good. All right. Well, let's tell our listeners and watchers the next step if they want to know more about Elo Health. That's up to you.
Anyone can go to... Yeah, anyone, you know, if you want to try the gummies, the powders, other things we've built, or the testing, you can go to elo.health and you can sign up today. We are available in the whole country. Lowest price to start with the gummies today, I think, is $59 a month. So it's pretty affordable. And we live for the feedback. So anyone jumps in, find me. I'm Ari Tulla. LinkedIn is the platform you find me most easily, and I always respond if you send a note.
All right. So that's Elo Health, Elo.health, E-L-O, like Electric Light Orchestra. Yes. And also Ari Tulla, T-U-L-L-A, on LinkedIn. Very good. Phil, I confess I had some anxiety about this particular interview. I'm really pleased we did this.
Yeah, so am I. You know, one of my overarching philosophies, you know, on this whole journey over the past few years is it's usually worthwhile to talk to interesting people. And Ari certainly fits that bill. And so I think this was great. And I hope the audience enjoys it as well.
All right. Well, for Ari Tulla and Dr. Philip Ovadia, this has been the Stay Off My Operating Table podcast. Thanks for sticking with us. This contact information will be available in the show notes, so check it out. And we will talk to you next time.
Chances are you wouldn't be listening to this podcast if you didn't need to change your life and get healthier. So take action right now. Book a call with Dr. Ovadia's team. One small step in the right direction is all it takes to get started. Contact us at ifixhearts.com/talk. That's ifixhearts.com/talk.